pro-choice liberal feminazi slut Rush Limbaugh warned you about. It's Start Me Up.
Start Me Up.
With Kimberly A. Johnson.
Well, hello. Here we are again. And today I'm going to do the show all by myself. So I posted something on Facebook and I wanted people to ask me questions, and it could be about anything. I specifically said it could be about politics or Donald Trump. It could be about pop culture or music or whatever. And of course, most of the questions that I received are people asking political, you know, about our current political climate. So I'd like to start off with the idea that, or not the idea, but the fact that growing up, I never paid attention to politics. When I was younger, I even was, when I was a teenager, late teen, I was a registered Republican, and I can honestly tell you, I didn't even realize what that meant. In school, I didn't learn civics. I wasn't taught civics. I do remember, you know, we had history classes, and occasionally there were some classes that covered some of the political things that were going on in the news, but overall, I never learned about suffrage. I didn't learn, especially, I should say this, when I went to California public schools, because first I was raised in Maryland. I went to school until the third grade. Then I moved to California, and I was in fourth, fifth, and sixth. And then in sixth grade, I went back east and lived with my aunt and uncle for a couple of months, where I attended a little bit of a better school, which was a public school in Maryland, Howard County, Maryland, actually. And then after that, I lived with my dad and stepmother in communist Russia, which I will go over in a second. And my father was a cameraman for a big news corporation. So I had the opportunity to live there and firsthand see communism. But while I was going to school at the Anglo-American school in Moscow, I actually did learn a lot about current events. That was short-lived. It was one school year. Back to California schools and in the eighth grade, and finished out in California. So I never really learned a lot about how our political system worked, and if they taught it, it didn't stick. I didn't remember a lot of it. And then I just was like a normal teen. I cared about clothes and boys and going out with my friends, and occasionally I might pay attention to some of the subjects on the news. But long story, I was just never that, you know, big into politics. I started to become interested a little bit when Bill Clinton was running, because a girlfriend of mine at the time was very interested in politics, and she kept talking to me about this guy named Bill Clinton. And funnily enough, my father, who lived in Maryland and I live in California, was on the, I believe he was on the Clinton campaign trail. And so they flew to Los Angeles, and my girlfriend and I went to meet my father. We were in Santa Monica. We were going to meet my father for dinner, and Bill Clinton just happened to be right there. And my girlfriend saw him and pointed him out. So we went over to him, and he shook our hands and he asked for our vote. And then I pretty much didn't care and went on my merry way, but I did vote for him. And then, you know, things in the news would grab my attention, a lot of sensationalistic things, like when we were going through the shock and awe, the bombing of Iraq, and you know the first war, that not war, but when we went over there, I know that my father was over in Saudi Arabia, and I think this is like, what was it, 1991? I can't remember, but I paid attention to the stuff that was going on, as long as it was exciting and sensationalistic, and then I was back to my not caring about any of it. So that leads me to the 2000 election. That's when I kind of started paying attention. My mom had been talking about it. And then, you know, the whole fiasco with the hanging chads and Al Gore and George Bush in Florida. So I paid attention. I understood a little bit more about the process. And after that, I started watching more news programs and following what the Bush administration was doing, listening to my mom freaking out and complaining at every turn. And then cut to 2008. That's when Obama was running against McCain. And I think what really woke me up was Sarah Palin, because she freaked me out. At the time, I wasn't really worried or concerned about the radical right. Then she popped up and she freaked me out. Fortunately, she didn't get very far, and McCain lost and Obama won. And that's, you know, of course, I was paying attention. I was watching the news. I was watching MSNBC, Lawrence O'Donnell, Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann. And, you know, after that, I think it was, you know, I was still doing my thing, paying attention, but doing my thing. My mom and I put out our first book, The Virgin Diaries. I started doing some political blogging, a little bit on my own personal blog, nothing major. And then I wrote the open letter to Rush Limbaugh from a liberal slut, which got picked up on the Facebook page Being Liberal, and which led to me writing for the blog Addicting Info for a very short period of time. And eventually I moved over to Liberals Unite. That's when I really started becoming engaged. And I noticed, I started paying attention because of what was happening with women's rights, the defunding of Planned Parenthood and the Susan Komen Foundation. And then I just started blogging about it. Since that time, since I started blogging for Addicting Info, I've, you know, been around paying attention, and I became an activist. So I say all of that because I asked for some questions and I got a lot of really good questions, and some of them I'm not going to be able to answer because I don't really have an answer. I don't know everything. And in that case, I may call on my producer and boyfriend who happens to be sitting right here, Bob Seska. If you don't know Bob Seska, he writes for Salon. He's written for the Huffington Post. He has a podcast, The Bob and Chez Show. So there might be a few times that I refer to him and ask him what he thinks. And, you know, for the most part, he and I agree. We don't always agree politically, but overall, in the bigger sense of things, we do. So whatever questions that I'm going to answer when we get to that part, they're my opinion. That's what I think. If he, you know, if I ask him what he thinks, it's going to be his opinion and what he thinks. I always like to encourage people to do their own investigations and come up with their own ideas about things. Isn't that the beauty of liberals, is that we all like to figure out the best way to do it, and then we argue with each other forever about it. And that's kind of what happened in this past election. The liberal groups, the progressive groups, didn't agree with each other when it came down to Bernie and Hillary. And I'm not blaming anybody here, so let's be clear about that. But we had a real problem within our in the Democratic Party and with the progressive voter base. So that said, I'm going to start with, there was an article in NPR today that I saw called something about I Told You So. The Bernie people are saying I Told You So. So, you know, and then if I see something like that posted, maybe on a Facebook page, a political page or a group or whatever, then, of course, here comes the fighting. And the people who voted for Hillary think it's ridiculous. And the people who voted for Bernie are screaming at the people who voted for Hillary and acting as if it's all their fault. And if you've been paying attention to what I've been posting, I'm really, really getting sick and tired of this because, you know, it's not just one simple reason that Hillary lost. There's a lot of reasons that that come into play. And for us to get on our, you know, self-righteous high horse and point to each other and blame the other is such a monumental waste of time, because we have a very glaring problem right in front of us. We have Steve Bannon, who's going to be in the Oval Office. We have Donald Trump, who's the president-elect. We have a right. This isn't just right-wing extremists. This is white supremacists. This is racism coming back to America in a way that no one ever expected. And it's, the shit hit the fan. It's real. It's in front of our faces. And so we can point fingers at each other and scream at each other all day, but we're playing into their hands because we're being distracted with what we as individuals think needs to happen. And that's great. We all need to have opinions. We have to do our own investigation of the facts. We have to form our own conclusions. But in the end, this country is not filled with progressives. It's filled with conservatives and progressives and every, you know, and then the independents in between. So we have to always keep that in front when we're thinking about how we're going to move forward. Because if we get lost in the idea that it can only be this way, or I'm not going to support, you know, the party or whatever, then we're going to lose again. And it's my opinion, and this sounds horrible and dire, but this is what it's come to. Right now, we're at such an important part of history because it's really do or die for America. If the liberal, progressive, independents, anybody, the never Trumpers, whether you're Republican or not, if you don't want to see, I should take that back. If you want to just ignore everything or argue, then we are going to lose everything, because it won't take long for the people in the White House to change this country forever. And as I mentioned, I lived in communist Russia. It was 1980 to 1981. I was there for one solid school year in my seventh grade. And, you know, I wasn't so politically aware, but I got to see firsthand what it's like to be in a really huge country, heavily populated country, where the people who lived there just accepted communism because they didn't have a choice. If they spoke up, they were arrested. If they wanted to be a chef, the government decided that they were going to go, crack ice on the roads outside, because that was an actual job. I used to see men standing outside on ice-covered roads with just, a few tools, and they were cracking the ice and breaking it up on the streets. So it didn't matter if you wanted to become a doctor or, if you had dreams, if you were a scientist or whatever. Too bad. They decided what you were going to do and you couldn't fight back. And it's a huge country. We can't ever, ever, ever think that that could never happen here, because it absolutely could happen here. And it could happen here if Trump decides that he's going to start arresting everybody who's peacefully protesting, then the people who are protesting eventually are going to be too afraid to protest, and they're going to give up and they're going to tune out. And it's a perfect storm for whether it's communism or what's happening right now currently in Russia. So this whole podcast is basically my plea with you to not get lost in the arguments, to not be distracted, to recognize that we have to unite in order to move forward. And we're up against a lot, and it's a big fight. So in order to be successful in winning, we're going to have to put aside our anger about why this election didn't turn out the way we wanted it to. And, again, there's all these people saying, well, if only the DNC would have put up Bernie. Well, you know what happened? People voted and Hillary Clinton got the nomination. If you want to argue that he wasn't given a fair playing field, I'll agree. To a point, I'll agree with that. But the same can be said for Barack Obama in 2008. Perhaps you remember all of the Reverend Wright videos that were all over MSNBC. People argue that the media wasn't fair to Bernie. Well, the media wasn't that fair to Barack Obama in 2008, but he was able to convince people to come out and vote for him. And he won. So, there's also the idea that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC completely sabotaged Bernie, which I don't think it was a complete sabotage. They certainly didn't help him. And if anybody who's follows, if you follow me, you know that I'm not a big fan of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but she certainly isn't the sole reason that this election turned out the way it did. There's all kinds of things in play. Cut to the general election, where you have the, Trump and Russia talking back and forth during the campaign season. You have the FBI getting involved. You have 30 years of right-wing smears against a woman that they hate. You have a lot of people who decided they hated her based on those smears. Now, some of the things and arguments that were made against her, I was right there saying, yeah, I want you to talk more about whatever, fracking or the pipeline, or, there's a couple other things that I didn't think that she was addressing. But what I saw in a lot of these Bernie groups, which I belong to because I did support Bernie in the primaries, the attacks on Hillary, the people who were in these groups are utilizing the right-wing propaganda to smear her. I mean, I even saw somebody posted something that there was a possibility that Hillary Clinton had John Kennedy Jr. Killed so she could take the Senate. it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. And when you allow yourself to get lost in these conspiracies and believe all of this and convince yourself of things that aren't true because you're seeing it on Breitbart, on a Bernie page, this is exactly why we lose elections. Because people are just so lost in their own emotion and they're not paying attention. Anyway, I'm rambling and I'm kind of getting off. I have this piece of paper in front of me with all these crazy notes, and I'm trying to get to them before I get to my questions. So anyway, when I was going back to my whole political evolution, when I was a teenager, I was kind of interested in punk rock. I was really not a punker, but I hung out with people who were like suburban punks. And I do believe that is why I'm an activist now, because I believe that we need to be proactive and we need to fight against some of the things in the system that aren't working for everybody. And I've noticed, and I know I'm new to the game, but that's what these liberal, I never know what to call us, liberals, progressives, Democrats, whatever you are. We are reactive. We wait until something terrible happens and then we become outraged and it's too late. So I'm urging everybody to not only be proactive, but if you're listening to me, more than likely you're the choir and I'm preaching to you. So how do we overcome just the little bubble that we're in? I would say my advice to you is to not only get involved in local politics, obviously to do anything you can on Facebook or any kind of social media, but seek out people who you think, like, for instance, sometimes I go to when I'm at the grocery store during the election season, I'd be at the grocery store and a young person was ringing up my items and I would ask them, are you registered to vote? And I would just engage them. I didn't tell them who to vote for. I didn't tell them, you know, what I was interested in. I just asked them, are you engaged? Do you pay attention? Do you know what your candidates are saying or the candidates are saying? And, you know, I don't know. Is it going to help? I don't know. But it's better than doing nothing. And we have to do something. So people tend to move or I should say people tend to do something. They react when they're uncomfortable. So, hello, we're all pretty uncomfortable now. It's time to start acting. Whether that means protesting and peacefully protesting in the streets, whether that means having conversations with young people that you know or people that really aren't politically engaged, you can ask them what they think. Encourage them to seek out factual, you know, articles or send them some articles and just don't preach, but just, you know, maybe a gentle nudge and an urge, because we've got to change how we're dealing with things in this country as progressives, because we're losing and it's frightening. It's really frightening because we're not just dealing with, like I said, a right wing government, typical, normal, what we're, you know, Reagan Bush thing. This is a whole new ballgame and it's really, 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 really scary, as you know. So just in a second, I'm going to get to your questions. But there's one thing I also want to address before I move forward, just for the record. I think it was like last month in October, I traveled to San Francisco to do a show called The Lady Brain Show. And I was with a woman, the host, her name is Stephanie Dominguez-Walton. I hope I said Dominguez right. And prior to our interview, she sent me an email and she said, hey, I have this idea. I was listening to Mike Pence talk about how he wants to ban abortion, and I was thinking that we could together, you know, work on a campaign where we could urge people to make donations to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name. And I thought that was a wonderful idea. So I got a meme made up and I put her name, I put the Lady Brain Show on it and We Are Woman and Rock the Slut Vote and me as sponsors. And it took off. And we were really happy to see that the meme got a lot of shares. Shortly after, somebody on, I believe it was Instagram, kind of said the same thing. Like, you know, did you know you can make contributions to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name? And for some reason, that caught the attention of celebrities and then eventually all of the big name political outlets like Huffington Post. I think even BBC covered it. So for the record, Stephanie Dominguez-Walton of the Lady Brain Show originally came up with that, and she's not getting credit. And I hate to see I mean, she's just so thrilled that the contributions have been pouring in, and so am I. But, you know, credit where credit is due. I emailed some of the people who wrote these articles, and they never replied to me, which is kind of sad. But if you're listening, just know that it was her, Stephanie, who came up with this brilliant idea. Okay, so now I have, like I said, I'm going to address some of these questions that you guys have asked on Facebook. And I'm going to address the fact that I just said you guys in a second, and you'll see why. So hold on and let me get to them.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year.
Okay, so my first question that I'm going to read, it's so fitting. It's from a woman named Esther, and she says, Kimberly, I appreciate your Facebook presence very much, and as you may know, I often share your posts. I'm also a person with an extensive background in linguistics plus political activism. I see your words and language as powerful contributors to the brainwashing that results in aggressive, unabashed misogyny and racism and ageism. I wish to ask, with great respect and gratitude for your work, if you don't mind, or if you don't think the phrase, you guys, is among the patriarchal tropes that perpetuate unconscious sexism. Like a woman's married name, it purports to include and yet explicitly excludes the female, which places it in the same category of words like man, used to refer to humankind, and God, used to refer to universal energy. So here's what I have to say about that. I totally get where you're coming from. I don't disagree with you at all. Because I'm 48 years old and I grew up saying you guys, it seems like it's going to be very hard for me to break that. I don't want to diminish this. Sometimes I get, I certainly don't like too much of the PC crowd. I can be crude and I enjoy being crude. And sometimes I think it can be nitpicky and a waste of time. In this particular instance, I see your point. So Esther, to answer your question, I will make an effort. I cannot promise you that I will always remember this because, like I said, I've been saying it my whole life and I'm so used to it. It's something that's become second nature to me, but I recognize your point and I appreciate your question. So there's that. There's also now the, I asked the question, for, you know, on Facebook that, or I should say I asked for your help. So that you guys would start asking me questions that I could address on the show. And of course, I mentioned that the trolls were welcome. So to my knowledge, I got one question from someone who's a troll. His name, he goes by the name Drew Bindle. And I looked at his Facebook page and he likes lots of porn stars. And it appears his friend or his friends are, you know, all women. And they are scantily clad women. And, you know, I don't even know if that's a real Facebook page or if it's just some account that he can go around trolling on. So he asks me this question. Is the back door open for business? And do you enjoy going down? Put your money where your mouth is, beautiful. So here's what I have to say to Drew. That's my personal business and not yours. And I'm not going to answer you. I told you I would address it, but I would say it's a stupid question, but that would be belittling the idea of stupid questions. That question is, you are the perfect example of what's wrong with men in this country. That's the best I can say because it's fucking ridiculous.
I'll answer the question face to face.
And that's Bob. Bob, my boyfriend, who's 6'4", and how much do you weigh? 220?
Yeah.
He'll answer your question face to face. I mean, and I normally don't, like, you know, expect men to come to my rescue, so that's not what this is about. This is about this stupid idiot Drew Brindle, whatever your fake name is, being crude and being ridiculous. Anyway, so there's that. We've covered that. I don't believe that there's any more troll questions here. I will say, okay, here's one. Jack Shipley asks me, Trump is draining the swamp, but filling the White House office offices with creatures from a black lagoon. Good start. The biggest switcheroos on his voter. So I think what you mean here is, okay, he's draining the swamp to a degree because he's putting people like Steve Bannon in, but he's also evidently choosing a lot of the what they're calling establishment Republicans. And what I have to say about that is I keep hearing people or seeing people on social media or even on the news saying, oh, well, you know, the people that voted for him are gonna find out that he's not really doing it. I don't think they're going to care. I don't think they're going to even notice. They'll find a way to turn it around, just like they did with Sam Brownback in Kansas, who has basically killed the Kansas economy and continues to get voted in. So I think Donald Trump and everybody he's putting in, I don't think it's going to matter if he chooses establishment Republicans. I don't think that the people who voted for him are going to get all pissed off. I think they're just going to be happy that they got their way. And, you know, I think that they could bankrupt this country, destroy the economy, and this Republicans would find a way to blame it on Obama, or they'll never take responsibility because they just never do. So there's that. Jim Adams asks, where's the hope? That's a good question. I don't know the answer. I think the hope, this is my best answer. The hope comes in the form of, at least my hope, is that liberals and progressives can figure things out when it comes to how we're going to reorganize the DNC. And eventually, I hope that once those decisions are made, that people are going to accept them. I mean, you don't have to like all of the choices, but accept that that's what we've got. And it would be great if those choices are good. But here's where I'd like to get involved a little bit. I watched a documentary last week called Housequake. And it was about how Democrats took back the House in 2006. Howard Dean was head of the DNC at the time. And Rahm Emanuel, who I'm not a big fan of, basically they went in, they had a 50-state strategy. And they picked Democrats who represented the people in the states that they needed to. Let me back up. They needed 15 seats to fill in order to take the House back. And after all was said and done, they got over 30 seats. So we won the House in 2006. And so that strategy was done by going into some of these deep red states and finding a Democrat that mirrored the people of that particular state or district or wherever. And they weren't like Bernie Sanders. They weren't like Keith Ellison. They were Christian. And some people like to refer to them as Democrat in name only. Maybe they were, but the deal was that they had to caucus with the Democrats. And they were successful because people in those counties could look at these candidates and say, that person is like me. And that person cares about my bottom line and my family and putting food on my table. Where if you have sometimes, you know, in these deep red states, you're not going to get somebody like Nina Turner or, well, you know, whoever, any of these people who were cheering right now in the Progressive Party, they're not going to fly. I would rather win. I don't know about you, but I would rather win and I would rather build on that win. So like, let's say we get a dino and in Oklahoma, but we can win Oklahoma. Maybe that person isn't going to be the most progressive candidate or elected official, but they're still going to vote with and caucus with the Democrats. So my theory is that if the DNC is successful and continues to be the party for the people, when we, you know, switch everything up and we have hopefully people who are literally going to work for the people, then there will be more of an opportunity to expand on progressivism in the deep red states. Right now, we've got a wall up and we're going to have to get through that wall somehow. And it's not going to be by putting like an extreme left person in there. You may disagree with me and that's fine. The whole point here is let's look at when we're looking at somebody to either be the Senate majority leader or the DNC leader, that we don't get all caught up in rock star names, that we don't get caught up in just names, that we need to know what the plan is. What are they going to do? What is their, you know, it, let's say Howard Dean wants to throw his hat in. And I've seen a lot of people scream, no, not Howard Dean. Well, what's his plan? How is he going to be able to bring us to victory? He has the 50-state strategy plan behind his belt, which I can look at and say, hey, that's great. I really like what you're doing. Whether it's him or whether it's Keith Ellison or whether it's, you know, whoever else who they're who talking about, I want to know what their plan is to go into places like Oklahoma and Alabama and Texas and find out what they're going to do to get us a win in 2018. So when you ask where's the hope, that's what my hope is. I hope that all of the people who are bitter about the fact that Bernie Sanders didn't win, that, you know, after you take time to kind of grieve and get angry, that you're going to get involved, you're going to be vocal, and you're ultimately going to support the party that isn't fascist. Because if we try to split off and set up a third party, I don't think we have enough time before 2018. So that's the hope that I see. I don't know if that's going to satisfy you, but that's kind of how I look at it. Let's see. I see people here asking me why there's kind of the similar questions. So excuse me for just a second as I switch around and look on another thread here. I will start with this one. It's the same guy asked me the same question. Sam says, I think a good subject would be how we can patch the divide within the party and unify so we can mitigate the damage that will be inflicted in the next 4 years. Okay, that's pretty much what I just answered. So, you know, you heard that one. also, Megan asks, how much compromise can we really make when it comes to civil rights? Well, I guess we're going to find that out, aren't we? Again, this goes back to being proactive. We weren't proactive. A lot of us were, but not enough of us were. So I think we're going to find out how much we're going to lose in this next administration. And it's frightening. I think the best thing we can do as individual groups, like women, Black Lives Matter, different subgroups of the party, I think we need to be vocal and stand up and encourage participation, encourage, you know, like I said, doing your own research and investigation online, finding out how you can be involved, whether it's getting involved in your local Democratic Party, whether it's getting involved in donating your time to Planned Parenthood, finding out where there might be meetings for Black Lives Matter, whatever. Just get involved, because our civil rights are under fire now in a big, huge way. And so we have to start participating if we want to see any kind of success in 2018, because I think right now we're not going to see too much success. I think we're just going to see rollbacks. Eric wants to know if I have any more books coming out soon and if I have any future book ideas that I'm itching to get started on. Well, I do have a new book called Peyton's Choice, and that's out right now. In fact, if you go to my Facebook page, I wrote a Huffington Post article on why I wrote about it, and it's about teen abortion. But before I go any further, I just want to say that it's about teen abortion, but that's not the only thing it's about. It's really about a teen romance with a young girl, and she meets this guy and she falls in love and she realizes that it's not as great as the movies and stories, you know, that we read and all this stuff. So it's a build up to where eventually about 2/3 into the story, she becomes pregnant. And then she deals with an unwanted pregnancy. So it is a book on teen abortion, but that's not the whole picture. The whole picture is kind of female empowerment and teen romance. Little bit based on my life, little bit pulled from other people's lives that I know. And I also looked online, you know, when I was looking, you know, at the articles that I was writing for reproductive rights and going on feminist Facebook pages and seeing what women were saying, or even my own Facebook page and seeing what women were saying. I incorporated all of that into the story. As far as any future stories, I don't really know what I'm going to write next. I have some ideas, but nothing concrete. And the way that it works for me is I have to kind of like, an idea has to just come to me. And then and then I'm like excited about writing it, and then I'll write it. If I don't have an idea, I can't just force myself to write about something, especially at this stage in the game, because my mind is just swirling, and everything that's happened with the election has made me kind of, scattered. I just feel scattered, and that's probably coming through right now. But I don't think that I would be able to, I would probably not be able to sit down and write a story. I can tell you this, though, whatever story I'm going to write next will have some kind of an emphasis on female empowerment, because that's what I believe in. And when I was a young girl, I used to enjoy watching like The Bionic Woman and Rhoda and Mary Tyler Moore. And I always read books written by women. So I just want to kind of be like that. I want to be one of the women that I would hope that young girls and even some young guys or I doubt boys are going to be reading teenage romance books, but you never know. I'd like to just be, I don't know if I want to say that I want to be a role model. I just want to put out information that girls can feel, when they read it, empowered. Okay. So now, Kathy asks me how to deal with comfort and reassure intelligent, aware, and scared biracial children in a red state. I don't know. I'm very sorry that you have to deal with that. I believe you have some biracial children, if I'm not mistaken, just from seeing posts. I don't know. I mean, I would be frightened. So I don't know what to tell you. I wish I had some kind of words of wisdom or some kind of comfort to give you. The only thing that I can say is, at least, you know, off the top of my head, what comes to mind is encouraging your children and other children that you may happen to be, you know, around at the time to be friendly to each other. And for example, I read something on Facebook the other day where a woman was in line at a drive-through, I don't know, you know, let's say McDonald's or maybe even a Starbucks. And so she was, she could see the people behind her. I think she was with her friend or her son or whatever it was. So there was somebody behind her with a kid. And I guess this woman in front had a Hillary Clinton sticker on her car. And she could see the people in the car behind her making fun of that sticker. And they were taking snapshots with their phone. And in that quick moment, she decided, you know, I think she mentioned that there was this woman and it looked like this woman was with her son who were making fun of the Hillary sticker. And she thought to herself, wow, you know, I wonder what this son has heard about liberal voters. And in that quick moment, she decided to tell the person that she was paying, let's say it was Starbucks, to include the person behind her. So she was going to pay for the person behind her. And she thought, maybe that's going to send a message to this young man and he'll understand that maybe not all liberal voters are whatever he's been told. So, random acts of kindness. I don't think that's going to solve everything, but I think that's certainly something we can encourage. I mean, this is a difficult scenario that there is no easy answer. But I think it would be great if liberals all over could just encourage doing good deeds and paying it forward, because we're going to see a lot of really ugly things coming out in the news and it's going to be disheartening. And so, and just keep your kids safe and protect them as best you can. Okay. So next question. Why so many that are turned off to politics didn't vote? They have nothing to bitch about. This is coming from John. They have nothing to bitch about these elections. They did not participate in. I never liked that argument that when you say, well, you didn't vote, so you don't get the right to complain. They complain anyway. So that's a stupid argument in my opinion. I think the better argument is to, like I said, to do what you can to, help people who may not understand what's going on politically. But I think the most important thing that progressives need to do right now is to get involved in 2017 in local elections, and especially in school boards, because then if we can incorporate civics in all of our schools, more children would be able to understand government and have a much better understanding when they grow up and perhaps might want to participate. It might give them some incentive to participate because, you know, we're fighting against Fox News, which is not really a news organization. It's an entertainment organization. And so they can pretty much say anything they want because it's just entertainment. And when you're not getting the whole story, and when you've got parents who are listening to toxic radio personalities like Rush Limbaugh and Alex Jones, and that's all the news you're getting, you need to start with a foundation of understanding of government, and that's going to start in school. Obviously, parents should teach their kids about politics. Usually, I guess, you know, some parents are, but most parents aren't, you know, making sure their kids understand civics, especially in the day and age where parents are busy, you know, working and just trying to get the bills paid. They don't, you know, have the time or the energy. So it's really got to start with when you're young. And instead of pointing fingers and say, you didn't participate, so you don't get to complain, that's not a solid argument to me. It's not going to keep somebody from complaining. It's not going to keep somebody from feeling disgusted about what's happening. Encourage engagement. There's that. Here's something that I'm going to kind of throw to Bob, and it's a whole bunch of points here. Larry says, my predictions for the next 4 years. And he says, this is the last question I'm going to take here too. He says, the Dow will lose 3,000 points by July 2017. He will gut Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. He will privatize Social Security, and they will gut it. He will get us into a ground war by November 2017, a new one. He will be instrumental in starting World War III sometime in 2018. He will bankrupt America after and offer 23 cents on the dollar, and he will appoint an alt-right to the SCOTUS. So that's a lot of bullet points here. General thoughts, Bob?
Well, I think some of those things are actually a little bit possible. I think he's going to try to do some of those things. I think what we can absolutely expect is some form of Trump military action. That's going to come at some point. I think we should be ready for that. I think they're going to try to reform, privatize Medicare. They're going to try to repeal Obamacare. It's unclear whether they're going to be able to do either. Remember, George W. Bush came in with a massive, or what he claimed to be a massive mandate out of the 2004 election, tried to privatize Social Security and failed miserably with a Republican Congress. The left rose up and fought against him and shut it all down. It didn't happen. The public outcry was significant. No one wants anyone to screw around with their Medicare. It doesn't matter whether it's going to be younger people who are going to have to deal with it or if it's people that are they're on Medicare right now. It's going to piss off everybody. And so that's going to happen. I think what's most concerning is something that just came down today, which is that Peter Thiel, who is a, you know, it's a Silicon Valley investor. I think he's responsible for PayPal is one of the things he's invested in or was invested in. He's the guy who helped Hulk Hogan sue Gawker and got Gawker pretty much shut down. He was just meeting at Trump Tower today with Donald Trump. He was seen today walking out of Trump Tower. It seems to me as if the best way for Donald Trump to completely destroy the free press clause of the First Amendment is to use Peter Thiel and other wealthy Trump supporters to sue other publications, just like Gawker was sued and shut down. So I think we should be prepared for that, too. I mean, you know, I've got a pretty wild imagination and I can think of a lot of different things that could happen. And everything is on the table. I think I think one of the things we've got to do is to target any Democrat who decides that they're not willing to stand up to Donald Trump and the Republican agenda. Those Democrats have to be primary challenged in the coming 2018 election. Do what the Tea Party did. The Tea Party primary challenged and town-hauled all of those Republican candidates who weren't aligned with the Tea Party movement. And what happened? The Tea Party was able to actually make headway in Congress, actually gain a bunch of seats. People like even Rand Paul and Ted Cruz all were swept in the Tea Party revolution. And I think a same thing can be done on the left. And certainly there's a target big enough in Donald Trump to motivate people to get involved in that activity. So I think there's a ray of sunshine there.
Yeah, I agree. That said, I'm going to move in just a second to the end another thing segment of my show. So that brings me to my asking you to support the show and becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You can pledge $1 a month and you'll get my undying gratitude. You can pledge $5 a month and you will get access to the bonus show that I'm about to do called End Another Thing, where I'll either, you know, I'll, if I have a guest, we'll continue our conversation. But in this case, I'm going to answer a few more Facebook questions. And if you pledge $10 a month, you'll get access to a free bonus third show with a special guest, which is mostly going to be Bob Seska, although on occasion it'll be other people. And we'll talk about some crazy things. Anyway, will probably be inappropriate and we will not be politically correct because neither one of us are big fans and we'll probably be a little bit of offensive, but it's worth it, isn't it? Thanks for listening and stay tuned for End Another Thing.